Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome, one and all, to whatever pink and channel you happen to be on at this moment in time. We're here to react to that Stuart Webber interview that, of course, went out live this morning on Norwich City's official club channels. Worth noting straight away, I think, as already the Radio Norfolk boys have said, I think it's probably worth us adding as well. We did ask to speak to Stuart Webber. Those requests were either ignored or turned down, whichever way you want to look at it. So worth getting that in straight off the bat. But I mean, also, before I kind of go to pad and we speak about our opinions on it, we want to know your opinions on it as well. I'm sure a lot of you will have watched it. 33 minutes in total. We'll delve into the various topics that he spoke about and some that he didn't and wasn't asked about, perhaps more pertinently. But we want to hear your comments and your thoughts on it as well. You should be able to post a comment on whatever channel you are on. We will flash some of those up on the screen as we're going through. We may well touch on a few of them as well. Of course, if you have any questions for us on it, we'd be happy to take those and we'll answer them where we can. Let's see how we go. So Paddy, I'll throw over to you really, because we're going to be asking people what they made of it. What did you make of it? We've both watched it in full now.
Just, Connor, yeah, just because I was probably one of the last people to actually watch it, because when it all broke, had to pivot towards actually getting something up on our digital channel. So, but that was an interesting dynamic, because I'm doing that, and very swiftly, once the interview had been pushed out there, the social media commentary, all the elements that you can probably imagine were getting highlighted, flagged, particularly the sort of early part of that interview when, the fans and the local media perhaps had already made their decisions that the season or the game was up. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but no, that didn't go down very well, did it? And then on and on through various other strands of that interview. So having had that as my first exposure to it, and then when I've only in the last sort of 35, 40 minutes sat and listened to watched the full 33 minutes, yes, those elements are in there, but, you know, he was in a very reflective mood. But, as I can see already with the comments coming through, you know, there was some areas there that either were not covered at all or very cursorily, and I'm not trying to suggest that, you know, it would have been a radically different interview, but if we had been in the room, you can guarantee we would have come back at him on quite a few of those points. So it is what it is. We don't need to get into that for this debate, but a lot of what he said for me, you could take on board and you could understand it if you kind of dialed down the frustration and the anger in some quarters. He talks about 20 people or whatever it was with a bed sheet, a minority. You can debate that. But I think there's a much wider feeling among the Norwich fan base of disconnection, disenchantment, frustration. And it would have been good to explore that in a bit more depth, really. But, the whole element, again, revisited about the Times interview and specifically, you know, his outside interests. Now, we thought at the time, when we said it at the time, you know, that for us is neither here nor there in terms of his ability to do the job he does. So I certainly wouldn't take issue with anything on that aspect. But, you know, fundamentally, for me, it was two areas, really. We didn't really get anything in terms of the recruitment last summer beyond, you know, he thought it was all right and that they had to spread their resource thinly, which a lot of people have interpreted now as, you know, him almost talking up the limitations of the self-funded model, certainly at Premier League level. But you'd have wanted to go far more forensically into the recruitment. Why was it so poor? You know, what were the challenges they faced last summer? Why did they, you know, go so far down the path for a Christopher Iyer or maybe even a Philip Billing? And then turn out again. So I think that, because fundamentally, I think most fans, if you look at it and say, what's gone wrong this season on the pitch, they would start as their starting point, the recruitment last summer. So that was an area that wasn't covered in any great depth for me. And then the other one, we don't know if he's staying, you know, beyond his end of his current contract. There was nothing on his future. And I think that is important because there were reports after relegation was confirmed that that rolling deal, which had been verbally agreed, was yet to be signed. We're no further down that path of knowing if that's been signed, sealed, and he's on board for the next phase. You know, we talked in more ephemeral terms about the future and bringing people back together and the season ticket update and learning lessons. We heard all those sound bites as we did two seasons ago at this stage. But is he going to be the man at the helm? And for me, they were the two glaring elements of that interview. I mean, I'll throw it back to you, Connor. What was your initial impressions?
I think it's really important that people at football clubs, politicians, people at top of businesses, people who put themselves in leadership positions and are paid a great deal of money to be in leadership positions, it's very important that they are accountable and available for scrutiny, irrespective of how a season, how a business year has looked, how a financial year has looked, if you want to use business terms, because everyone should be able to scrutinize decisions of people in power. It's a really important part of democracy more widely, but certainly football as well, because particularly in the modern game, I think those feelings of disconnect that you speak about can probably be stretched out and looked at on a wider basis. I think there are a lot of people who support Premier League football clubs at this moment in time, maybe not just Premier League football clubs, maybe others as well, who feel quite detached from the way that modern football is going. And so to then declined to speak to local media, and let's be honest and open about it. It's not a great shock that we weren't there. We weren't probably expecting to be there, but for Radio Norfolk, for The Athletic, for other people not to be there in the room, not to have a round table, I suppose, like he has done in the past with the other relegation, where he did take responsibility and we were able to put questions to him about the shortcomings. I think ultimately, whatever he said in this interview, that was always going to go down well, because if you work for Norwich City, and we've already seen this with kind of the BK8 saga, they project themselves to be a different type of club, a club that does speak about its model a lot, one that is very community focused and looks into the community and wants to be a part of the community. And, you know, we've said it before, if you're not speaking to local media about stuff, then you aren't speaking to fans about stuff, not really. And that's a shame from my perspective, because those people should always be available for scrutiny, whether they agree with organisations or not, whether they agree with stuff that's been written or not. So that's one aspect that I would say. On the flip side, I think it's probably the most in-depth bit of media that we've seen from one of the relegated clubs. I'm not sure Watford or Burnley have had someone, a senior figure, speak up in the same way. So that's worth bearing in mind as well. So I have a lot of feelings and thoughts on it, and we'll get into the contents at the moment. But the way it was presented for me never really felt like it was going to win people over. And I mean, looking at the comments, and maybe that's the case as well. And that's not a criticism of Alice Piper, by the way, who I think is very good at her job and did ask some very good questions in the video as well. But it's probably not a good situation to be in when you've got someone who is speaking to the organization that they work for, really, because you don't get the same level of scrutiny, as we've spoken about. You don't get the issues that maybe should have been touched upon, they weren't touched upon, and that would be my kind of issue with it, really, because if you're at the top of an organization, you have to be accountable. It's really important, I think, because if not, then how do you learn from mistakes and how do you learn from errors? But there we go. Let's start at the beginning then, Pad, because he started the interview by speaking a lot about luck and pre-season and obviously the COVID outbreak inside the club and how maybe fixtures hadn't fallen in the right way. He then went on to say that he felt the fans gave up a little bit too easily. He said, and I think I'll get it in front of me, so I've got the exact quote, that the local media went after us too quickly. That's what he said. So if we start there, and we'll kind of move through it chronologically, but do you agree with those assessments about luck and pre-season? Because I think a lot of it, certainly around the COVID issues, which we reported at the time, a lot of that you could construct into a fair argument.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. That's factual. And of course, the hellishly difficult Premier League fixture compiler didn't do many favours either. But I just don't accept that whatever the volume of that two constituencies he's referring to, be it fans or local media, gave up. To paraphrase him, I find that bizarre. I'm going to basically make it quite clear now and the rest of this broadcast, when we're talking about local media, all I'm interested in is us and what we do. You know, I don't want a broad brush approach to what any of the other operations out there do or don't do. For us, I can categorically deny that there was any giving up, there was any negative tone to our coverage in those early...
I remember writing a piece in defence of the Talk Sport stuff, for example, on Jamie O'Hara, on why the model of Norwich City Football Club was so important, and probably still believe this to an extent, why it's important that there could be a self-funding club in the Premier League. So, I mean, to say that maybe we were out to get them or the fans gave up, I'm not sure that that's in touch with probably how it was in reality.
Wouldn't disagree. And way beyond that point as well, if I'm honest. I mean, all the way through the Farker replaced by Smith cycle, then the upturn under Smith initially, then the upturn again early in the new year. I remember, you know, the Everton Watford. Where was the giving up there from us when we're talking about local media? So, you know, our job ultimately should be to, you know, whether we're local media or whether you were the national media, is to scrutinise, to hold to account. You're talking about accountability from the club's aspect. Our role is to, you know, be balanced, try and be fair, but also critical. And fundamentally, and he's the figurehead for this, they've got it badly wrong again this season. And that's not a subjective statement. Look at the league table. Look how many games your team won. Look how many defeats. Look how many goals you conceded. Look at your goal difference. Diabolical. And he ultimately has to carry the can for that. And yes, within that, of course, you would accept, as he did again today, that there are limitations to the self-funded model. And maybe that's a broader, more philosophical debate. But even within the limitations, and it comes back to recruitment, you spent upwards of 50 million, north of 50 million. That wasn't the limitations of the self-funded model. That was the limitations of you and your recruitment department and the player that you bought, which were palpably. And again, I mean, he did again make the point that, you know, they have to buy players with a potential to develop and become fully formed. Amy Buendia being a prime example. But you still would have thought that they would have been able to buy players and source players last summer who were able to be far more up to speed with what was required for the Premier League. Otherwise, what's the point in the recruitment? You know, it's no good to have got your recruitment last summer right for this summer back in the Championship. It needed to be right for the Premier League. So, you know, fundamentally, we would refute in the strongest possible terms that we gave up in the sense that, you know, we'd wrote them off and were producing output of the, you referenced them, the Talk Sport kind of genre, almost sneeringly dismissive, treating Norwich as a joke entity. No way. At no point could we be accused of that. And, you know, we're talking a lot here about us and the local media more broadly, but put that to the side. The more damning suggestion there is your fan base gave up. I don't see that at all. I mean, he did again, in the interests of balance, to go on to talk about how brilliant the fan base is and about the season ticket uptake again for next season and the support they had at Leicester after relegation had been confirmed. But you said all those things, but also at the start of that interview, you also said that elements of your fan base gave up. So, you know, which one is it ultimately? So, yeah, I don't think that's, you know, of all the things that he came out with in that interview, I think that early hook is probably where a lot of fans and probably us in our part of the media would take issue with him ultimately.
Yeah, there was also, whilst we're on kind of the subjects of fans, he said later on, and you're right, he did praise them and season ticket figures. We haven't actually been given those figures. We have asked in the past and they haven't been forthcoming. So, there we go. We were told they were strong at one stage. In fairness, there was two lines in particular.
Were strong in League One, Connor. They were strong in League One. So
yes,
that's a bit of context. You know, Norwich's fan base, through thick and thin, very thin, when they were in League One, will support the football club. It's not an endorsement of what's gone on this season, is it? Or the regime? Let's be honest.
Exactly that. That's exactly my point. I was going to make is that the best way to assess whether fans are happy or whether they're not. Because I think in reality, the ones that we speak to, and we speak to plenty every single day, we speak to them on social media, we speak to them in person. When you walk around Carrow Road, they come up and speak to us. I don't think I've spoke to one who's very content with the way things are going. And that's right. That's proper in a relegation. But I mean, even in these comments, we're seeing words like disconnect. Again, there was a statement that he used in the interview that said that the majority of fans stayed behind after the Spurs game to applaud the team off. That's, I mean, we were both at Carrow Road. I think it's probably fair to say that that's not based in reality either. And there was also a smattering of boos as they approached the Barclay as well. So, to go back historically, because we could sit here again and talk about all the brilliant work that Stuart Webber has done at Norwich City, and he has, and the training ground improvements are mega. The club from where it was when he inherited it is in a much healthier position financially. That's all fine. But I think throughout these interviews, when he's come through, a lot of fans have taken issue with these constant pop at supporters, even though he did go on to talk about how great they are and how brilliant they are and how strong the attendances are and how important they are to the club. But those digs, particularly when you're in charge of a team that's just got relegated 16 points behind the team that finished fourth from bottom in the Premier League on 22 points, doesn't really feel like the best way to approach it from a PR perspective.
No, but again, this is where I'll stop short of saying would defend Stuart Webber, but his behaviour in terms of how he carries himself in the media and what he says and how he says it and the tone of it, he's been absolutely consistent. How he was today and what he said was how he was when he walked through the door in 2017. And actually, I pulled out the quote. You know, his actual quote was, and it was off the back of a question about the Times interview and maybe would he regret some of the things he said in that he said, quote, "I'm authentic. People in my role don't talk." He's right about that. They certainly don't talk in as forthright a manner as he does. And certainly in that early phase when the club was on its knees, that was refreshing and that was energising. And that lifted a club that needed to be lifted at that point. But as he says, I'm not here to appease people. And I don't think anybody would say that he certainly is a conciliatory individual when he's asked a question in a setting like an interview. And so for me, that it's not so much his manner or how he carries himself, because that is him. That's what he's all about. And he's right. You know, I can only talk from my experience. I've basically, since the Paul Lambert, David McNally era onwards, have been in and around that football club. And he is unique in terms of a figurehead, which is essentially what he is. We know Delia and Michael are the owners, majority shareholders, but they are day-to-day very hands-off. And for somebody in his position, there's been nobody like him at Norwich in the period that I've been covering the club. And refreshingly so, as I say, very, very honest and open. And people don't like that. They won't like it. But, you know, ultimately, you know, I think you could also probably look at the situation, look where the club is, look where it was, you know, again, repeating the same errors in terms of two seasons ago, and maybe show a little bit more, shall we say, empathy, an understanding of how that fan base are feeling, rather than, you know, it's a minority with a bed sheet and look at the season ticket uptake and that everything's okay. It clearly isn't that isn't the case. And we see some of the comments here, people saying they've renewed, but you know, now seriously considering whether that was the right call or not. There is a general feeling amongst Norwich's fan base, and it's not people racing around to the back of the City stand after a game, you know, to protest, but there is, and I don't want to bring Dean Smith too much into this directly, but he talked about apathy and how he couldn't see that. It feels like there is an apathy and there is a disenchantment and a disinterest, and that is a worrying development, really, because you know, as you rightly said, there will be a full house for the first game next season. But what happens if after 10 or 15 games they're listing pretty badly and there's no real palpable sign that things are going to be certainly on a par with the two previous championship seasons, where you know they were fully plugged into competing at the right end of the table? Do we think that season ticket fan base are going to be happy. Far from it. I wrote about it the other day. For me, it feels like the patience is way for Finn now, and it wouldn't take much to tip it the other way at the start of next season if there's nothing discernibly different around the club on or off the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would pick up on a few points there. Is that what they're basing success off? Is success based out on really strong season ticket sales? Because if that's the case, then they need to come out and communicate that. And obviously that's very important for the self-funding model from a financial perspective. But also, like you say, I don't think it's the best gauge of, well, they're still coming, so I think they're still happy. Actually, you look at a lot of games this season, particularly the last three home games. Carrow Road was near empty by the time the final whistle went, really. Are we really saying that that's a happy fan base? I'm not sure that anyone can credibly say that with all seriousness. And there certainly was fans that stayed behind and did applaud after the Spurs game. But on the flip side, for balance, I would say the majority of them certainly didn't. So there's that aspect of it. It's all very interesting, Pab, because I think there was always going to be an element, because of what you've described there with his personality, regardless of when he was going to come out and speak and who he was going to speak to, there was going to be an element of what he said that people didn't like, right? That's natural, and it's probably true after a relegation. I suppose we've kind of seen the fan reaction from it, so I'm kind of leaning into this question a little bit, but do you think what he said there is going to be enough now to draw a line under it and move on? Do you think he's added fuel to the fire? I suppose it's probably more of a question for other people now. Has he answered the questions that needed answering? I mean, for example, we spoke about the recruitment very briefly, but if we touch on it again, he described it as all right. What does all right mean in the grand scheme of things? We're not sure. But also, he wasn't asked about the comments that he made last summer about the various a tank, a bazooka, and whatever he said. He wasn't asked about that. He still felt that this squad had plenty enough under its bonnet when he departed with Daniel Farke's company. That's why he ultimately made that decision. So how do you think fans will digest this interview? Obviously, there's a lot of emotional responses right now, understandably so. But in the days and weeks ahead, is this going to be enough to draw a line under this season and move on? Or do you think actually he's probably poured a little bit of fuel on the fire?
Well, again, I mean, when did it drop? Probably 2 hours after the initial sort of video. So it's probably unwise to draw hard and fast conclusions, but it doesn't feel, that it's particularly placated a fan base, certainly on here, on this broadcast. You know, the tone of most of the comments are pretty critical, pretty fed up, I would say. So it doesn't feel like that, but ultimately, I think whether you were happy with what you heard, whether you were not happy, whether you can kind of understand the elements around the limitations of the model, perhaps, and you know, trying to bridge that divide, whether you accept that as mitigation or you don't. Actually, the fact that now that is out there, that piece of content, and people can take it on its merits or dismiss it, wherever you sit on the spectrum, it's done now. That, for me, is the line, because he's not going to come out and do any other media. I think that's pretty clear to say, looking backwards anytime soon. So that's essentially, for me, right, that's that season now, packaged, done and dusted. So you're saying, can it help? I think what needs to happen now is action. It needs to be, and he touched on possibly the limitations to what they can do in the window with Dean Smith. It did really chime with what Dean Smith has been saying about he feels he's got the majority of a squad who are good enough, and it won't be wholesale changes. And I think Stuart Webber even talked in terms of, you know, they could do a couple of bits of business, and anything beyond that would be dependent on outs. So that doesn't lead you to think it's going to be wholesale. But irrespective of the scale of the, I think for me now it's what this window looks like off the back of, let's be honest, a very, very poor window 12 months ago. So it's the signals that this is going to be different, and that the grade of player, albeit for the Championship as opposed to the Premier League, but the glaring deficiencies in that squad, which Dean Smith has touched on, particularly in the midfield areas, with and without the ball, they address that in the window. And then, for me, that's the first stage in moving the dial and looking forward. But but it doesn't feel that that interview, that the topics that were covered, the what he had to say is necessarily going to assuage people who are frustrated and fed up with it. So I think it's going to be actions from here on. And there was obviously a little tease about some exciting announcements in 2 to 3 weeks that would help grow the football club. I think we'll be all interested to hear what they are. And, you know, that suggests it could be things that could engender a bit of optimism. I have my own theories, but we'll keep them under our sleeves, Connor, for a few more days.
Good idea. On the transfer window, I mean, it was interesting. He kind of said that there wasn't a lot of money floating around, but which again is kind of at odds with what we've been told in terms of the club being in the strongest financial position since he's been in charge of the club. There is, of course, still that kind of COVID stuff in the background, which will persist for a little while yet, of course. And you have to take that in account. And also the drop in revenue from the Premier League money to the Championship, for example, that is absolutely massive. It's why they're called parachute payments, because it is off a cliff edge, essentially. So that's worth bearing in mind as well. He also said that he felt that it would be based a little bit on outgoings. And I think we've already reported about Max Aarons, Milo Rashica, Grant Hanley, Tim Krul as well. Timo Pukki are probably players you would put in that persuasion. He also said as well that there was Premier League interest in some of the players, which was interesting as well in itself. And then there was an interesting bit on kind of the Times interview and realigning maybe, or some would argue maybe completely changing the context of obviously that 90% quote, which, I mean, we spoke about at length on the podcast after the Newcastle game, and we spoke about the fact that that was taken out of context. So anyone who's maybe after a little bit of balance from us can go and check that out, and they'll certainly see our thoughts on that then. So we don't need to cover reground, but he did go over that Times interview and spoke about his personal life, and obviously this kind of pursuit to climb Everest, which he's obviously doing for charity. Also got a little plug in there for his podcast, which was nice. What did you make of his comments around that? Do you feel that he covered that point off as well? Because obviously that has been thrown at him. He has, context or no context, become known as the 90% man, rightly or wrongly.
Well, wrongly. I mean, and we, as yeah, you rightly say, Connor, we at the outset, you know, that was the Newcastle weekend. We did a podcast on that night, and we basically said, you know, that was completely at odds with what he is, which is a workaholic. And you know, I don't really, on this whole, to put a label on it, Everest thing, I just don't have any issue with it. But the way it was portrayed, and he's talking about taking out of context, well, go and have a look at the headlines that were on the Times article. You know, it wasn't taken out of context by any other media. You know, they who put that interview together have pulled out those quotes, which were seized upon, you know, as an indication that is no longer committed. And he addressed that today. You know, that simply isn't the case. But again, going back to what I said about maybe taking a step back and not compromising who you are and your personality and how you conduct yourself, but just maybe take the temperature and see what the situation is and the backdrop that those comments could be filtered through and perceived and in his view, taken out of context, you know. And if he had, and I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have, you know, maybe gone down that route. But no, I thought, I mean, as I say, for me, it's complete red herring. I wouldn't buy into it too much. But in terms of the, you know, his suitability to do the job he's doing, but I think the context he added today did open that up, you know, to sort of maybe closing the door on that, and that yeah, you know, it isn't a case that, you know, he's knocking off at R3 Monday to Friday, and you know, he's not there on a Saturday or Sunday. I think, you know, if anybody had any doubts, just go and listen back to that passage of his interview today.
Yes, absolutely. And on that side of things, I thought what he said was very good. Again, to go with the balance point, I think what he did say and how he did clear that was very good. I think Paddy's negotiating so he doesn't get kicked out of the room here, which is going to be quite entertaining to watch. But yeah, from my perspective, I'm with Paddy on that. I think we said, in that podcast at the time, which is freely available, you can go and listen to it. We gave our thoughts on that interview the night that it, well, 24 hours after it dropped, and we spoke about the context of it. But ultimately, unless you're Stuart Webber or Henry Winter, it's very difficult to fully know the context around it. But I think we both agreed that that was the case. He spoke a little bit about criticism as well, not just from local media or from national media, from fans as well. He spoke about some of the protests that have been happening outside the main entrance after games. Of course, there have been a minority, I think it's right to say that, a minority of people with banners. There was the snake pit attempted to get a We Want Webber out chant going on Sunday. It didn't catch on, but it was still loud enough for us to hear in the press box a little bit along from where we were. He again spoke about building for the long term, building the club for the long term, which we know he's big on, the infinite game. And he has a very philosophical outlook on football, on life. That's just the type of character he is. And maybe there is a element of, I don't know, maybe not everyone sees life through the same lens as him, and that's absolutely fine. And maybe that's why it makes it difficult at times to understand the directness and honesty behind his words. So I found that all very interesting. I mean, is there anything else, Pat, in terms of stuff that you really found interesting that you want to bring up at this stage? If not, then we'll probably go to some comments and questions.
No, yeah, I mean, all I would add is that, you know, that's certainly the first time I've, and again, you know, I don't, having him felt that things have been taken out of context and twisted, I don't want to put a different slant on some of the comments, given we were not in the room. But it did feel that, you know, particularly around the recruitment element and that gulf and bridging that divide, that was the sort of first time I'd kind of heard him almost talk about, you know, there are limitations, you know, however good. I mean, I think one of his opening answers was everything has to go right for Norwich with this model to stay in the Premier League, off the pitch, on the pitch, in games, look in other areas as well. Everything optimizes to be completely right. Otherwise, you know, he's more or less suggesting that, you know, the model won't allow them to stay up as a result. And then with the recruitment, you know, that they had that money, they had to spread it thinly. And even the, you know, again...
That was a choice, though, wasn't it, Paddy, in terms of them spreading it thinly, because they could have opted to sign fewer players for bigger money and bigger wages. It was a footballing choice, ultimately.
Yeah, it comes back to not so much did they spend money, but how they spent it, ultimately. And I don't think, as we said earlier, I don't think you can lay that at the door of the model itself. But then again, and he's reiterated this, that I think he said, you know, when I go into board meetings, I don't want to be a kind of gamble it all, put all the chips on the table just to stay up this season. And then the club isn't in a good state season two, season three. I go into board meetings, if they want that type of man, I've told them that's not me. So again, you know, that kind of mid to longer term sustainable strategy. I mean, I pulled out the quote and I'm just looking at it again. The toughest part of the job is balancing the ambition to want to be in the Premier League with the sustainability that we still, if we make mistakes, we could go bust, basically. So essentially, that for me is the nub of it, you know, that we still have a football club, sorry, with the sustainability that we still have a football club. If they make mistakes in this model, the club can go bust. So he's essentially saying the self-funded model is a football equivalent of a tightrope, certainly when you get to the Premier League. And while that probably, we knew that to be the case, I can't honestly recall him, given his position within the self-funded model, coming out and talking quite in those terms. You know, it was a very different tone to, again, albeit we were present, two summers ago at this stage, relegation confirmed, we've gone down to Colney. And then it was, blame me, don't blame Daniel, I got things wrong. The buck stops with me. It's all on my shoulders. This time around, it's more, don't blame me. Don't blame one individual. It's almost the limitations of how we're trying to do it and how we're trying to bridge the divide. And that I thought was a different tone. So for me, that was probably one of the most interesting takeaways, really.
Was it a realization that the way Norwich are trying to exist doesn't work in the Premier League? I think I'm kind of with you. It kind of felt like he touched around that subject without really maybe directly saying that. But it did kind of feel like, I mean, he gave the Chelsea example again, which I think we've heard him use in the past about bringing on Lukaku, and I can't remember who the other one was, but two world-class players, and Norwich were bringing on... And they were bringing on John Rowe, and that's kind of the... I mean, it's a very extreme example, but you could use it really at every level in terms of...
Well, he talked in that section, he talked about Sunday and Tottenham, and he said they had, in every position, in his view, a world-class player. And quite clearly, you know, Norwich are nowhere near that. So the gulf is vast, absolutely cavernous. But, fundamentally, I think we know all that. We know all the limitations, but there is still that sense that even within everything had to go right, did they maximise, did they optimise what they had to play with last summer in the market? They didn't. Naming one of those players in that summer intake who left the sort of one of those players, and I know that was the Championship and this was the Premier League and the tariff is a lot higher, but still, you know, to get the recruitment wrong to that level where none of those players could step forward and really improve that 11 at Premier League level, fundamentally, it's not the money that was spent, it's how you spent that money.
Yes, indeed. All very interesting, I think, particularly when you kind of look at the challenge that Norwich City have ahead of them, which is back in the Championship, trying to get themselves promoted again. And to be fair, very few sporting directors in football have a better CV at Championship level than Stuart Webber. So I think he used this term, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said it's an environment that we're used to having success in. And that feels like that could maybe be a major reason why that transition and that shift might be easier than, say, someone like Burnley this summer, who have financial problems of their own, because Norwich they do know the Championship. They know how to be successful in the Championship. So we'll see how that transpires. But I think unless we've got anything else to add, Paddy, I think we're probably there, really. I mean, the one point that I did want to maybe sign off on was there was a quote. Let me try and find exactly what it was, but he was talking about communication. I'm just trying to find it ahead of me. Here we go. He said, we communicate more than any other club in the country. I believe in our model. We talk when things are difficult, not only when things are great. I've already had a lot of questions about whether that is our kind of experience of it. So Is that a fair assessment? Like we said at the top, I think it's very rare for you to find someone who is in such a senior position in a football club that's just gone down, and you can directly look at Watford and Burnley. They haven't done this level of communication with fans after they've been relegated. So he probably does have a little bit of a point on that quote and that aspect of it.
Well, absolutely. Up until the point where he's made it very clear he doesn't want to engage with us anymore. Which is only obviously very recently in the scheme of his 5 years, is it, at the helm. Up to that point, yeah, as I said earlier, you know, in my fairly lengthy experience now of being in and around this football club in terms of covering them, he is unique. And his, you know, the access, although, you know, not to the extent of a certain individual who took to the web to commit to a piece which contained factual inaccuracies, but we don't need to go down that route again. He was very accessible and amenable. He's absolutely spot on about that. But filtered through an interview which takes place with an individual who is there at the behest of the football club and is edited by the football club. And he's put out on the football club's channels, which has no media, local or national present, doesn't really send the message that they're now being open and communicative and transparent. So, you know, yes, up until about however many weeks ago it was now, no question, everything he said was spot on. But clearly, yeah, filtered through the events of the last 3 or 4 weeks, and particularly now this interview and how it's been put together, that's a bit of a laughable comment, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I do find the idea that we, as in me and you, could go after anyone is quite a hilarious thought, to be honest with you. But there we go. And I think it's also on that point, on a more serious tone, it's worth saying that actually scrutinizing someone is completely different to going for them. I don't think those two things correlate at all. I think you can be constructive in your criticism without making it personal, and hopefully everyone watching this and everyone who's consumed our content will agree that we tend to strike critical but fair if that's what's needed at times. It's always our job to be skeptical about a lot of things and to ask questions and to find out what is fact and what isn't. So this idea that maybe we're out to get people, or there's an agenda, or we have a particular desire for something to happen, or we're trying to get a particular message out there, I just think that's nonsense, really. We, as you said numerous times, Paddy, exist as a communicational channel to supporters. We act as a news source for people to find out about Norwich City Football Club every day, no matter what the season, no matter what the month, whether they're playing or they're not playing, as they're not going to be for the next few months. That is the purpose of our existence. It's not to go out after people. It's not to really try and hold a light to or make things personal. Rather, what we want to do is ultimately ask the questions that fans want asking and answering, but also to try and ensure that everything that we do say is factual, is accurate. And I think I'm struggling to think of a time where that's not the case. I don't think it has not been the case at all this season. So that would be my closing remarks, really, in terms of this idea that we're out to get anyone or that there's an agenda from our perspective. It's just utter nonsense.
Agreed.
Well, good said. Good stuff. Okay, I think we'll leave it there. Plenty more, of course, on all our Pinken channels, pinken.com, the Pinken Plus app as well is there. We're going to have plenty more content throughout. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for all your comments and questions. We probably haven't got around to as many questions as we would like, but we've had plenty of your comments reading through them. We have read them, and we will read them as well. And it's always appreciated. Thank you for all your support this season as well. This week's podcast that you can go back and listen to, that was recorded yesterday. It obviously doesn't contain the kind of Stuart Webber aspects of it, because that was based in this. I think we'll probably put this out as a podcast as well. That seems to make sense. So if you've joined us late, or you've joined halfway through and you want to watch the whole thing back, you'll be able to do that on our YouTube page or on the social media channel that you're watching this on. There we go. Thank you very much. I'm sure the rest of Thursday is going to be lovely and quiet, and we'll catch you all on the other side. Thank you very much. Enjoy your Norwich City free weekend. See you soon.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.